What makes a leader? What pulls us beyond what we thought was our best and into sustained greatness? Tune in right here with Ron Kitchens to learn how to challenge and change your best so that you can move forward into leading at your highest level.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Ron Kitchens. We have a special guest today. Dr. Randy Ross is in the house. So Randy's a great friend, and the secret is he's in town today because he's talking to our team and coaching our team on what it takes to be remarkable. So Randy, welcome.
Well, thank you, Ron. Man, it's always good to hang out with you.
It's good to have you here. And so first thing, you know, we like to check in with people, and how are you doing?
Well, it's interesting. You know, this last 18 months has been a bit of a strain on everyone. A lot of unexpected things have happened, and it's been challenging. We've had to pivot. We've had to morph like everybody else, but emotionally doing well. As a matter of fact, you know, because you're a friend, but during COVID, I wrote another book called Hope Rises. And I was very, very interested in kind of pulling back the curtain and exploring just the power and the impact of hope. And looking at it from a scientific perspective, because I'd never read anything that anybody else had put out there on hope from a scientifically researched perspective, and I was amazed at what I found. So it was a fun project.
So share with us, before we get into, you know, the topic of today, tell us about hope in a time that, you know, we've seen skyrocketing, you know, chemical abuse, self-medication, suicide attempts, suicides are all up dramatically. And, you know, I found the news that, you know, as we're recording this, we're about 10 days or 2 weeks from the earthquake in Haiti. Yeah. And I didn't know about it for a week because I just can't
handle
the news.
Been overwhelmed.
I'm overwhelmed with what's going on in Afghanistan. I'm overwhelmed with the hate of both sides politically. And so just said, I'm not going to participate. I'm going to do my thing. And which isn't, you know, I like reading the newspaper. So, you know, in some cases I lost hope, and we've seen it all over. What is the data? What does the research tell us about?
Yeah, well, let's get back and let's just admit that there's been a compounding effect. Mm-hmm. There's just been this layering of pressure and fear, anxiety, you know, uncertainty about the future. And the news, it doesn't help because it just continues to pile on all the bad news, all the challenges that we're facing. And quite frankly, we're not sure we're going to get a break for a while. And so I think people know they need hope. We all understand the basic idea, but nobody knows how to effectively define it. You know, what is hope? I mean, you and I, we've looked at it from a lot of different perspectives, but particularly from a faith-based perspective. Yep. And definitely faith, hope, and love forms the eternal trilogy that's bound together, that gives us a clear perspective. But I wanted to understand the faith foundation, but move and explore the scientific efficacy. And so that's what I did, because you and I both realized that even though we've been through a lot of crises, I think the larger storm clouds are gathering on the horizon, because the emotional fallout of what we've experienced over the last 18 months is significant, and it's going to be with us for a long time. All the things that you mentioned, divorce is up, suicide is up, substance abuse is up. Interpersonal relationships have been challenged like never before. We've had to live in closely, you know, confined quarters, and we've not had the contact with the outside world that we normally are used to. And we are community creatures by nature. And we are built to connect with other people. And when we have situations like we've experienced where we've not been able to interact in a healthy way with other people, think about it. Handshakes.
Yeah.
It's changed. Hugs.
Yeah, I'm a hugger, and it's really hard.
Yeah, just greeting people are just the hesitancy of getting on an elevator with somebody. I mean, all those things we never even thought about before. And now our whole social fabric has been challenged. And so I wanted to find out, you know, how could I put hope out there in a very practical way and clearly define what it is? And that was the fun of the project. So hope, defined, is simply this. It is a powerful motivational system tied to inspirational goal setting. And goal setting is just futuristic. You have to be able to see beyond the present crisis to be able to craft for yourself a brighter tomorrow. That's essentially what it means. But it's a dynamic motivational system. It's not just wishing or hoping. It's literally a system. There are practical things that you can do, that you can implement. There are practices and principles that you can apply to help you elevate your hope. And that was the fun of the projects, being able to lay that out for people so they would have a lifeline that they could grab onto and find some emotional stability.
No, I couldn't agree more. And you know, I think, as you know, I've given away lots and lots of copies of the book because I, you know, part of the privilege I have is being the first phone call for a lot of economic developers in the country to go, hey, I think I'm done with this career. I don't know. I'm not making any difference. I'm tired of being abused in the media. I'm exhausted with feeling like I'm the only one who's, you know, who's at the point of the spear every day, and you know, they've lost hope.
Right.
And well, so it literally is talking them through it, saying, I'm going to send you a book, and we're going to have a two-person book club. I'm going to talk through the things in there. And if you still think you need to, you know, go get a job at a car wash, I'm there for you, but let's talk it through. And most of the time, you know, what they need is hope.
Well,
and they need to find a place that they can value themselves beyond their 8 to 5.
Absolutely. Because, and what you said is so important, because right now everyone needs to connect with someone, and just the friendship, you know, to be there, to have someone to talk to. I mean, depression, simply defined, is the absence of hope. And that's what a lot of people are struggling with right now, is the absence of hope, because fear, uncertainty, anxiety have overwhelmed us. And it's interesting because, you know, fear is a powerful motivational factor. And when it's present, a lot of things can go wrong. And it just knocks you off center and causes you to lose yourself, because you lose sight of your purpose for existence. And so we wanted to interject some, you know, help into the world that would give people just some practical things that they could do. Exactly. I don't want to say it that way, but to give people some hope. That's exactly right.
No, that's right. You know, I that fear thing is an interesting thing. We meet as a team, you know, every morning at 8:05. And one of the interesting things was I asked the team a couple of weeks ago, are you more scared of failure or being seen as a failure?
What was your answer?
Overwhelmingly being seen as a failure.
Isn't that interesting?
Overwhelmingly, they were okay with failing, but they didn't want anybody to know.
Yeah.
And I said, we're going to turn this around. I want us to publicize every failure we have amongst our team. It's graduate school.
Right.
We just paid the tuition for you to learn a lesson. Now let's let you teach everybody else the lesson, and to try to remove that fear of failure. It's okay.
One of the practical principles of hope is vulnerability is courageous. So ask for help. You know, we think it's a sign of weakness to ask for help, but in reality, it's an acknowledgement of the fact that we're human.
Yeah.
And we all know that anyway. So why is it so hard for us to say, man, I'm falling short here, or I need help here, or I don't have the answer to this. Just could you please help me? And that's the beauty of relationships. Is because when you find yourself exhausted or you find yourself emotionally depleted, you can be energized by connecting more deeply with other people. But oftentimes it doesn't happen because people aren't always aware of the fact that we need that additional resource, that support, that encouragement. You know, you and I, we've talked about this before, but in connecting with other people, you have to do sort of a relational inventory and determine how many balcony people in your life you have and how many basement people you have.
Absolutely.
And I'm not talking about people who live in the basement, because we've got a lot of basements in Georgia and Alabama, but I'm talking about, you know, balcony people are those people who cheer you on, they encourage you, they want to see you perform well and live life at the highest level. But there are a whole lot of people in the world right now that are basement people.
Yep.
You know, they're naysayers, they're negative, they're critical. All they see is the dark cloud, no matter how bright the silver lining
may be. They
see
your success as their failure.
Exactly. And those are the people who will drain you, emotionally will drain you. And oftentimes I find myself, when I'm in a state of emotional, you know, disequilibrium, I have to stop and say, how many people in my life right now are fueling my effort? And how many are holding me back? And if I look at it, what I oftentimes find is I've just gotten into an echo chamber of negative people. And there's the cacophony of those negative voices in my life that just chip away and erode away my confidence. And that's when I have to stop, do an inventory, and go, you know what? I need to make a change here. I need to add some balcony people.
So my vitamin C for my soul, for that attitude, I'm feeling that way, is I have on my phone a bunch of Zig Ziglar talks.
There you go.
And literally, I will put one on, and an hour later, I am, you know, as he would say, I'm ready to go fish for Moby Dick, and I'm taking the tartar sauce with me.
Well, what was the famous Zig Ziglar line? How do you know when someone needs encouragement? When they're breathing.
That's it.
Yeah? And that's
it. And
Zig.
So I'll throw that on and just... Okay, now that's it. Okay, now I'm in a mental state. Now I can analyze where I'm at.
Right.
And what? How did I get here?
Yeah.
So, all right. Speaking of how we get here, so you know, we, I ask you to come in and meet with our team because we're trying to build a new culture, revitalize our culture around this idea that if you're not remarkable, I believe that's the minimum price you pay for the opportunity to serve your customers. And so, I'm a big believer in studying this. You know, we use engagement instruments to know where we're at. We're taking pulse checks regularly. But it dawned on me not long ago as I was selecting the next book for our book club, about what did I want our team to learn together. And it was this idea that I want them to understand the science, the culture behind being remarkable, that it isn't a transaction. It really is a life commitment.
Right.
You know, and one of the notes I made was marked in the book was engagement is simply a symptom of an organization's cultural condition. And that sticks with me, and I use that a lot because sometimes I love numbers, so I can let those numbers tell me that we're doing great when I know that sometimes the numbers tell me what they want the boss to hear.
Right.
So tell us about why being remarkable is important and how culturally organizations can take advantage of that.
Okay. Well, first, let's just talk about the word itself, remarkable, because it's a word that's bantered about some, but again, not everybody understands what it means. And it's a word that's dear to my heart because obviously it's the title of the book, but it's also the name of our company. And remarkable means that you offer a service or a product and you do so in such a way that you exceed all expectations. You provide world-class service. You go above and beyond. You mark someone's life for good. You do something positive to make their life a little bit better, even if just for a moment, but you do it in such a way that when people walk away from your presence, they have this irrepressible desire to tell someone else about the difference that you've made in their lives. And when they talk about you, when they're remarking about you and the difference you've made in their lives, then you have then become remarkable. So remarkable means you leave this indelible impression on other people. A mark that's not easily erased. So how do you do that? Well, it's not as hard as a lot of people think. It just means maximizing every moment to create value for other people. That's what it means. Because value creation drives the numbers. Numbers don't drive value. Numbers, you know, you're talking about looking at the numbers and maybe quarterly, you know, goals or whatever it may happen to be, but numbers never produce value. They're a lagging indicator. Value produces numbers. Numbers don't produce value. And so it's a matter of cultural development, and you're absolutely right. That's not transactional. The way we say it is that culture is an ongoing conversation within the life of an organization because people will grow into the conversations that you create around them. That people learn
Say
through
that
conversation.
Again. That's people will grow into the conversations
you create
around them. Wow, that's tweetable.
Well, think about it. I mean, I've got four kids, and I've got three strong-willed, stubborn boys. when I wanted to teach them something, I couldn't sit them down and go, "Now listen to me," because they get glassy-eyed, they get the glazed look, and they'd numb out within a matter of seconds. So if I had a really important lesson I wanted to teach them, you know what I'd do? I throw them in the car. We go on a road trip. Get up 60 miles an hour, lock the doors, turn off the radio, and just have a conversation. But never a lecture, always starting it with a question. So what's going on right now? How are you doing? Tell me about life. What's your biggest challenge? And talk, because the best way to start a conversation is with a question. And people grow into the conversations that you create around them. So if you want to help people grow, remain curious, start a conversation with a question, good questions, good, you know, lead-ins, and guide it that way. And let people unpack the challenges that they're going through, and then you can have an influence. And so culture is an ongoing conversation. What is it that people are talking about consistently within the life of the organization? Because that's what's important to them. And if you get the conversation right, and people are constantly having that conversation, but here's the key, and we were talking about this a few moments ago in your office, you have to have a common language to have a meaningful conversation. And a lot of organizations, you know, there's nothing wrong with a book of the month club, but the challenge a lot of times is you throw a lot of stuff out there, but they don't have a common language, a common conversation, because you're adding so much to it all the time. And so I think the key is you got to establish, what is our language going to be? It's part of the cultural norm of the organization. You've got logos, you've got language, you've got customs, you've got beliefs, you have values. All that plays into the culture, let's just call it the cultural mastery of the organization. And when you get those elements right and everybody's on the same page, then really good things can happen.
You know, I think that's one of those things that I think as we, you know, coach and work with companies, this cultural piece seems to me, I bet you agree, may be the new gold standard. Maybe it's always been, because we look at places, you know, it's easy to give the analogy of Chick-fil-A versus McDonald's and which one makes you feel great, even though in most cases you're going to spend significantly more. And in the end, it's a really good chicken sandwich, but it's not life-changing. But it's the way people make you feel. And in a time where America, and we're seeing it now, not just because of COVID, but because of the retirement of baby boomers and the fact that culturally we're at replacement levels of workers. But the fact of the matter is there are fewer workers coming in, where the replacement level of population, but a negative level of workers. And so the, you know, every state I know is projecting a shortage of, you know, 500,000 plus workers in the next 5 or 10 years. So companies are going to have to figure out how to deliver more value with less people. And nobody ever fell in love with a company because they had great robots. So how does this idea of being remarkable and the culture feed into the future?
That's a big one to unpack that. Well, let me just kind of poke at it for a minute. So you're absolutely right. Our experience, let me put it this way, a remarkable customer experience is your best marketing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Agree with that?
Yep.
So therefore, a remarkable customer experience is emotionally driven. And people create that emotional experience. So yes, we can go to automatic kiosk, you know, ordering, we can do all of that, but what's that going to do for the customer experience? You know, how's that going to make people feel? it's going to be very impersonal. How do you feel when you make a phone call to an organization and you get an automated response? You know, I don't know about you. I get frustrated. Yep. I want to talk to somebody. I want somebody who's empathetic, who can understand my challenges, understand my issues, and is personally going to be responsive. That's just me. And I don't think I'm that far off, you know, the norm for most everybody else's expectations. And we would, I think, all say, or many people would say, that your people are your greatest asset of your organization. I would disagree with that. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Because the right people are your greatest asset. The wrong people are your greatest liability. Because the wrong people are going
to
create...
We're back to balconies and basements.
There you go. Because the wrong people are going to leave a negative wake in the world, a negative impression. It's going to damage how people feel about that organization. And the challenge that we have as we face the future is, how do we create environments that attract and retain the right kind of people? Here's the crazy part. There's not a shortage of people to work in the marketplace. You ready for it? There's a shortage of great companies that are willing to invest the time and energy to craft the right kind of culture that will attract them. People want to be a part of a community. People want, now I'm not saying that everybody's being faced right now. You know, people are being paid not to work. Let's just, and people, but if you find the right people and you create the right environment, there are organizations I know right now that are having no problem whatsoever staffing up. And they're in some of the hardest spaces like fast food. Uh-huh. So it's not really a matter of are the people there. It's a matter of how are you attracting them? Do you have an attractive enough proposition that people want to be a part of what you're doing? And I think that is the differentiating factor that culture can make. Organizations with the right kind of culture attract the right people, they repel the wrong people.
Go deeper on that repel, because I've always been of the belief that, and I've seen it play out and play out and play out, that great organizations, as they get better and better and better, people who don't want to participate will opt out. And I see people leave organizations, and the organization gets better the day they leave,
right,
even though we'll call them they were a good C+ or B- player. They just now were in an A organization and opted out. But I hadn't thought of this idea that if you're finally elite, remarkable, they're not even going to show up and apply, because they've heard word on the street is that those people do something different there, and they're weird, and I don't want any part of that.
Well, you know this because it's language that we've often used, but there are two kinds of people in the world. There are value creators, and there are value extractors. A value creator is someone who comes to the table, they want to bring their best energy, their best effort, and they want to create value for other people. A value extractor is someone who says, I want to come to the table and get as much for myself as I possibly can with the least amount of personal investment. Well, if you're in an organization that believes in and builds and their culture is based on value creation, then value extractors are marginalized pretty quickly. I mean, they stick out like a sore thumb, right? Self-promotion, self-protection, you know, all about self-fulfillment, and it's not about giving to others. Those people are identified. And the same thing happens in the recruiting process. People look at it and they go, that's not really my cup of tea. That's not what I'm all about. And so it preserves the organization when you do have a strong culture of value creation. Here's an interesting idea. Think about this. Your customer experience will never exceed your employee experience. So what are your employees experiencing? What kind of culture, what kind of relationships, what kind of emotional impact are you having on the employees within your organization? Because your customer experience is not going to exceed that. So when you take good care of your employees will take good care of your customers.
So, you know, it's almost become cliche to use it as an example, but, you know, when I think of, you know, example, it's, you know, Chick-fil-A versus the world. And I'm sure there are other, you know, fast food restaurants that are doing a great job, and I just don't know them to reference them. But the, you know, what makes them different? What is that? You know, I've never met a B minus Chick-fil-A employee on a bad day when the bathrooms are dirty and the place is packed. Yeah. And they have all the stress piled in. I've just never met a B-plus, yeah, B-minus employee.
Well, here's what happens. It's interesting you should say that. And they're a great example. I mean, Southwest Airlines started off the same way.
Yep.
Ginger Hartage, who was responsible for culture there, is a good friend of mine. And, you know, they focused on hiring happy people. Mm-hmm. You know, it was pretty simple, but they got that part right. It's like if people have the right attitude, if they have the right disposition, then they're going to provide good service. I was drove it through a Chick-fil-A drive-through just yesterday. Early in the morning, I pull up, and the young girl there, first words out of her mouth, "Good morning. So good to see you this morning. What can I do for you?" Well, I mean, it just made me smile. I mean, and I, of course, I'm a big Chick-fil-A fan, and they use Remarkable even in their training with some of their field teams. And it's just that personal touch, that positive attitude, and I think that's it. I mean, people want to feel good, and there's so much bad in the world right now that's dragging us down.
So is it about selecting the right people or putting people in an environment where they can be who they are naturally?
Yes.
Is that
both?
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's interesting you should use the word select, because most organizations talk about hiring, recruiting. Chick-fil-A doesn't do that. They don't hire, they don't recruit. What happens is they have so many applicants, they select. So they select the cream of the crop. And it has to do with that person's natural disposition. But then also think about it. We are uplifted, we are encouraged, we are provoked to love and good deeds when we hang out with people of like mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the secret, is you take people who are naturally inclined in that direction, you put them with a lot of positive people, and it just has an exponential lift effect. And I think that's what you see. And that's not to say that Chick-fil-A is perfect, because my goodness, it's not. You know, so I hate to hold them up as the single gold standard. There are a lot of other organizations that are equally as great when it comes to customer service, but they do have it right. And here's what they have done well. They've been able to translate the heart of leadership all the way down to the front line. I mean, if you knew Truett Cathy before he passed away, that was his disposition. It was about, how can I create a special moment for everyone I encounter? And the stories just abound how he did that personally. He was such a warm-hearted individual who wanted to make your day. And it truly was, in his vocabulary, it was his pleasure to serve you. And he saw it. That's the way he saw life. And they've been able to effectively translate that to the front line. So it's the heart and the soul of the organization that resonates with the heart and the soul of people of like mind.
So that brings me to a question. So the one of my favorite restaurants in the world is Commander's Palace. Now, I know our friends from, you know, New Orleans are going to tell me there's lots of better restaurants and I should try this. I've tried them all. I love it. But something special. Lynn and I had a great experience at Commander's Palace 15, 20 years ago, that will always resonate with us. And I've written about it a couple of times. But one of the things that struck me is before COVID, the family that owns Commander's Palace started a new training school to train hospitality workers because they were struggling to find people who could hold the New Orleans standard of hospitality. And so the idea was, we're going to train people and go to work for any restaurant in New Orleans, because if New Orleans isn't great, then we can't be great. And so it's one of those things that I find fascinating when people step beyond their own needs and service the whole so that they can, it's back to Zig Ziglar. You can have anything you want in this world if you help enough other people get what they want.
Right.
And, but it dawns on me, two of the great service companies are Atlanta-based. So Ritz-Carlton and Chick-fil-A. Is that a Southern culture thing? So can I be remarkable in Seattle? Can I be remarkable in Phoenix? Can I be remarkable in Boston? Is the local culture the determining factor, or is this something we can train and develop in people?
Yeah, well, the good news is that that kind of culture is not geographically confined.
It just seems to be.
Yeah, there is something great about Southern hospitality. We can say that being from Georgia and Birmingham, but no. But no, that's I've been all over the country, and I've had some, excuse the little interjection here, remarkable customer service, you know, in a ton of different places all across the country. No, it just happens to be the heart and the soul of the organization. One that comes to mind is Skyline Chili. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go into a Skyline restaurant, you know, it is a warm family feel.
Yep, always clean as
always
can
clean,
be.
Always smiling, you know, folks. You're a part of the family. Welcome in. Have a seat. You're going to have a great time. There's so many examples. They're replete, you know. But the point is that it all is a matter of making sure that, number one, the organization understands the importance of taking care of their people. Yeah. And when senior leadership acts that way and creates that conversation and continually keeps that front and center in terms of priority for the organization, then it can have that cascading effect down the line. The challenge is oftentimes senior leadership gets so far removed from the front line that they lose touch, they lose sight of what's really important. And it's that front line exchange between the server and that person who comes into the restaurant for food or you know, customer experience at the counter or Ritz-Carlton, you know, how they greet you when you come into the lobby. It's those, the little details, the little moments. It's interesting because you mentioned Ritz-Carlton and Horst Schulz is a friend. And Horst, you know, he left Ritz-Carlton. He went on to the Capella Group. And the Capella Group, if you think Ritz-Carlton is luxury service, the Capella Group was ultra luxury service. And Horst says, you know, customer service is not that complicated. It's not that complicated. But a big component of that is just make it personal. Make it personal. And when you do that, when you make it personal, when you make people feel like they're part of the family, when you make people feel like they're really glad to see you, I mean, think about the little things. Go back to Chick-fil-A, just for example. How many fast food restaurants ask for your name when they take your order? Now, Starbucks will do that. They'll put it on the cup, right? But Chick-fil-A, you're not a number. You're a person. You're a real, live, breathing person. Just them calling my name to come, you know, get my food when it's ready, there's a connection there. There's an emotional connection there. And it's far better than a number, you know, 962.
Absolutely. So to our listeners out there that, you know, who are thinking, this is what I want, mm-hmm. whether I want to work for an organization that's like that, or I'm the point leader and I want to build an organization like that, but you don't understand, I already got a culture. How do you get started transitioning from average to remarkable?
Yeah. Every organization has a culture. Wherever people get together, you have culture. Because culture is just simply the way that we play together in the sandbox of life. And a lot of people may not think about it, but you've got a culture not only in your organization, you've got a culture in the gym that you go to work out, you got a culture in the church where you attend or the philanthropic group that you affiliate with. But think about it, you also have a culture in your home. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't stop and think about, what's the culture of my home? If you want to change the culture of your home, or if you want to change the culture of your organization, you have to be intentional about it. It's not going to just happen haphazardly. You have to make it your highest priority. You've got to be a champion for and a keeper of the culture. And it's got to be foremost on your mind. It is the single greatest challenge, but it's the single greatest responsibility of leadership. Because if you get the culture right, everything else will fall into place. Because people create your culture. People are, the right people, are the greatest asset you have. When you take care of those people, they will take care of your customer and everything else falls into place. And if you don't take care of your customer, you know, here's the misnomer. A lot of leaders get this wrong. They think the organization pays the people. And they don't. Your customers pay the people. You're just the keeper of those resources for a short period of time. And if your customers aren't paying, you're in trouble.
That's it.
And so maybe this is a good, you know, thing to kind of bring it around full circle, but organizations have to be focused not on making a dollar, but on making a difference. If you focus on making a difference in people's lives, you will make a dollar. But if you're focused only on making a dollar, and a lot of organizations are because they're driven by the numbers, right? Then it won't be too terribly long until everybody abandons your cause, because people want to do good business with businesses that do good.
My grandfather used to say, there's a reason the carnival only stays for a week. Everybody's figured out they're not in it for the community.
That's right.
They're in it for themselves, and yep, they have to move on.
That's right.
And I think businesses are that way too. If we create value, then we get to stay and win. So please, if you're listening today, go out and buy a copy of Remarkable. You can get it, as they say, wherever books are sold. Dr. Randy Ross, thank you for being here. Thank you for being my friend, and thank you for the impact you're about to have on my team.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the invitation.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us. If today's conversation has ignited greatness in you, take your next step and visit ronkitchens.com to gain more inspiration and to connect with Ron. You can also tweet Ron at Ron Kitchens. Until next time, keep moving, always forward.